As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
On this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast, we are going to talk about qualified small business stock, QSBS. Brady Weller and his firm specialize in QSBS and QSBS rollovers. So this is a strategy I heard about years ago that is really important if you work with entrepreneurs, business owners, that you understand how to communicate it. Not every client is going to qualify for it, but you need to know that it exists, and hopefully you can educate somebody in 90 seconds or less, hopefully on a whiteboard, on what the value of this tax strategy is. So today, Brady's going to walk us through from a high level down into the weeds so you can be equipped to share this with all your clients. Brady, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to talk, man. I love tax strategies. When we were talking before, one of them kind of jumped out to me because it's one I've heard of before in the past. But I'd love big picture for you to give us some of your background, and then want to talk about kind of ideas as a superpower. We were talking off camera a little bit about like the idea of tax planning, how that freaks some advisors out, but how can we go about it to add value? So this will be a good deep episode.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Yeah, we was at a venture-backed startup. I was the fourth hire at a company. Actually, we built the first wine investment platform out on the market. So it was a place where advisors, high net worth individuals, other folks could allocate capital to wine collections, spirits collections, really cool. They would appreciate in value over time. And we did that for several years. And we recognized while we were shopping around one of our funds that had a qualified small business stock tax advantage component to it, we realized there were some really interesting problems with the way that founders of companies dealt with qualified small business stock and the advisors who helped them work on that. And so we've started a new firm that helps people maximize qualified small business stock.
Love that. Yeah, I bumped into it with CPAs, and some stay away from it. They're like, oh, it doesn't really work ever. And others, you know, so I feel like as an advisor, I've bumped into it enough that's like, I know there's some meat here. So I hope by the end of the episode for all the advisors listening that you will have a pretty good understanding, at least to be curious and dive deeper, but like maybe even what are some knockout questions for a business owner and where does it really apply? But before we get kind of deeper into that, something we teach a lot to advisors, and this is where I've had to grow in over time, is when I became an advisor to start, it was like, man, I'm a salesperson. And then it was like, man, AUM's the way to go. Or if it's like, hey, sell insurance policies. I'm pretty convicted the way of the future is advisors need to be, you know, curators of great ideas, encouragers, great, project managers, because the data is out there. Like, you can get an expert to give you the ideas, but somehow you need to use ideas as a way to pull people's attention in. So where does that land with you, and how have you kind of, you know, grown in that way of thinking over time?
Yeah. And, you know, we're not CPAs, we're not tax attorneys, we're not financial advisors or financial planners. We just have sort of very niche experience and expertise in this one niche tax advantage. And so I get to talk to a lot of advisors, and it seems like too many advisors believe that their main role is money management. And it's money management is too much of a commodity between all of the really great online do-it-yourself tools that are out there. And then obviously the plethora of advisors around the country who can do that really well. Like you said, you do need to distinguish yourself with creative ideas that get folks in the door and justify maybe an ongoing advisory fee and other kinds of fees that you want to collect long term. And so the goal obviously is like, you know, as a business owner, how do you gush cash in the short term, but also build a foundation so that fountain gets even bigger in the long term? And one of those ways is being able to have tools in your tool belt that allow for tax mitigation and allow the expansion of AUM at year 3, 5, 7, 10, you know, down the line, not just on the day that an event happens. And so the events that we mainly work around when we're talking about qualified small business stock is usually the sale of a startup or a venture-backed business. So this is, we're usually working with startup founders who have gotten liquidity. Either they've sold some stock in their company during a secondary sale, or there's been an actual M&A event and they've exited the business maybe fully. For some of your clients, it could be angel investors, people who are investing into venture funds, or even business owners whose business is a C corporation. So I can step back a little bit and sort of give the details on what QSBS or qualified small business stock is. Yeah. And how do you know if you have it?
Let's go high level and like, here's what it is. Here's generally what it is. But then as we dive deeper, there's some of these nuances I've run into where I was like, oh, if that's not true.
Sure.
Because as an advisor, I don't want to bring up an idea. And for everybody listening, I use ideas all the time to get a prospect's attention. I'm not guaranteeing up front they're going to use it, but there is some power behind sharing something with somebody they've never heard of before. Especially when they're like, wait, I've had a CPA for 20 years. Like, I've had other financial advisors. No one's ever mentioned this to me.
Sure.
So I would say, as we unpack this and Brady coaches us up, like, use this as a way of, you know, communicating value and potential to prospects. But I think you also have to be really careful not to get too deep into an idea. And this has happened to me where, you know, you're four calls in and all of a sudden the prospect says one thing and you're like, oh.
That doesn't qualify.
It doesn't qualify. And you look silly at that point. And so everybody take good notes. You know, don't get overexcited and start like shouting this from the rooftops tomorrow. But I think it's a way of getting curious, finding a partner like Brady to say, hey, coach me up. But yeah, let's start high level and start diving in.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, it's really good if you have a prospect in your pipeline to say like, hey, I know you've had this event or you have this amount of wealth or these types of assets. Just so you know, we're not only a wealth management partner, but we're going to turn over every stone at every stage in your life and career going forward to make sure that if there's an opportunity out there to take advantage of, we're going to make sure that we've explored that with you because, you know, you can't know about everything. And that's why your prospects are looking for a team to help manage that alongside them. So just giving some of the confidence that you're actually going to do the deep dive that maybe they don't have the time or resources to do, I think is a value add in and of itself.
One important stat that pops into my mind is that the average advisor client retention is like 85%+.
Mm.
Which shocks me because I get to coach a lot of advisors and I've seen a lot of stuff out there. And a lot of it could be, you know, this person manages my money and I talk to him once a year. Or this person sold me an insurance policy 3 years ago and I haven't heard from him since.
Sure.
What that tells me is, you know, similar to people switching their bank or their auto insurance, it's like they know it could be better. It's just a headache.
Yeah.
And like, there's this really big event that pushes them. And sometimes the event, and this is where I built my practice, is bringing something different to the table. It's
correct.
Communicating something different kind of as a spark to initiate that change. Then the facts are true. You know, this is, a lot of us would want to deny this, that a lot of clients are willing to move if they have a reason to. And I think us as advisors almost take for granted that we think our clients are so happy because we don't have high turnover. I don't think those are really connected. So,
yeah, no, for sure. I think those are all great points. And advisors who are sensitive to just value creation over time and compounding that is, you know, you're going to win long term. Qualified small business stock, high level, we'll just say QSBS, which is how, you know, you'll hear about it most of the time in the market. It's a tax exemption. It's the ability to exclude a capital gain from the sale of company stock. And there's some criteria for what that company, what type of company it is that has issued that stock. So the company that you're selling stock in has to have been a C corp. So it has to be a C corporation that issued you stock, and the stock has to be issued directly from the company. So the types of people who might hold stock that qualifies would be founders of C corporations, right? You got stock at the onset. Could be outside investors in the corporation. So maybe venture capitalists, angel investors, LPs in a venture fund, sometimes private equity groups who are issued stock directly from the company. So when I say directly from the company, that means that if you acquire the stock of a business from maybe the founder of the business, so maybe it's a legacy company and you buy half of the founder's stock, and so now you're a partner there, You don't have qualified small business stock because you purchased it secondarily. It wasn't issued directly from the company. Yeah. But if you do have stock directly from the company, and the rules did change this summer so that there are sort of these tiered exclusion criteria in place. We're not going to talk about that actually at all today because really no one qualifies for that yet. That's going to be a few years down the line. Okay. So today what you need to know, if you've held stock like that for 5 years or more, when you sell that stock in the future, you can exclude up to $10 million worth of gain from the sale of that stock. So say you're the founder of a company, you have stock issued directly from the company. The company is a C corp when they issued the stock, and the company is less than $50 million in gross assets. So that's small, quote unquote, which is still very large. Gross assets are very large. That doesn't mean valuation. That means assets of the business. Mm-hmm. As long as all of that was true when you were issued that stock, say you sell for a $15 million gain, the first $10 million of that $15 would be excluded from federal income tax, and you'd only owe taxes on the other $5 million. Nice. So it's a $10 million exclusion if you hold the stock for 5 years. There are some other criteria, like the types of businesses that you can have to be involved in. So you can't be like a doctor's office or a law firm or a consulting firm. But most tech businesses, manufacturing, other service-based businesses all generally qualify for this type of exemption.
Nice. And then usually, are you saving the 15% long-term capital gains or the 20 plus the surtax on top? Like if you're excluding $10 million, what's kind of the in-your-pocket gain if it goes?
Yeah, the typical tax savings is going to be anywhere from 23.8%. So that 20% is going to be like the top long-term gains rate plus the 3.8% net investment income tax. Mm-hmm. So 23.8% really across the board for anyone. You're going to be saving that amount if you have a larger exit. And then QSBS is also recognized in some states that have income or capital gains tax. Nice. For instance, in New York, many founders we work with, especially venture-backed founders who have larger liquidity events, are facing a 35 to 37% combined federal, state, and Manhattan tax bill. And so on a $10 million gain, a $3.7 million tax bill can go to zero with QSBS in New York.
Strong. So I'm wondering, when I've run into this before, it wasn't as clean. Like something happened, like, you know, somebody was like, hey, I heard about QSBS, so how do I now become a C corp? So what's some of the nuance to this for the advisors listening to where, you know, if you happen to know a client in your book that has a C corp, like, and it follows all the steps perfectly, I think that's great. I think this is an idea that if you're meeting with a business owner, especially for entrepreneurs, to be able to say, hey, your current company doesn't qualify, but like anything you do in the future, we need to keep this in mind. I think there's value in that. The idea being used in the future too.
Yeah.
And then my mind also goes to, you know, the difference between the C corp double taxation versus like LLC. How do we navigate some of that?
Yeah, I think there are two different situations that clients or advisors are in when I talk to financial advisors and financial planners. One is the first one that you mentioned, which is I work with founders, I work with entrepreneurs, I work with business owners. I see a lot of C corps, or maybe I see a lot of C corps as well as S corps. And honestly, depending on where you're at in the country, you may see more of one or the other.
Yep.
In the Midwest, just because of the nature of a lot of the businesses there, and you're going to see more pass-throughs and partnerships and things like that. Whereas in some of the tech hubs in New York and California, where we work with a lot of clients, we have a lot of venture-backed tech businesses, and you see C-Corps all the time. Gotcha. So it can depend on your geography and where you're at.
Yeah, I'm in Tennessee, and it's a lot of LLCs. Like, we don't even see a lot of S-Corps here because there's some tax stuff. But yeah, to your point, for everybody listening, you know, you may not see this as much, but then that makes me think of like, but at what point are you recommending it because the benefit is actually there?
So if you have just a pass-through structure and the client that you're working with is intending to exit the business, say, over the next 3 to 7 years, it might be interesting to check out and see, hey, does it make sense to elect a C-Corp status or to convert to a C-Corp status as we prepare for an exit? Because obviously, like I've described, there are some considerable tax advantages being a C-Corp. The other thing to mention is that just because you're set up as an LLC doesn't mean you can't simply elect to be treated for tax purposes as a C-Corp. So a lot of times people confuse tax treatment and entity structure. Mm-hmm. An LLC can be a pass-through, but an LLC can also be elected to be taxed as a C-Corporation. And then you have a C-Corporation, which is also a structure, a business structure that many people who've been existing with a more simple LLC just don't need the structural quote-unquote benefits of a C-Corp, but could benefit from the tax treatment. So if you have an LLC and you're planning for an exit in the future, and you think that you can do a stock sale, you may want to look into converting to a C-Corp or electing a C-Corp status. QSBS requires that you sell stock. So another thing that you sometimes run into with legacy family businesses and other types of businesses like that, that have a lot of assets, they may end up doing an asset sale. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to qualify for QSBS. So you need to be a C-Corp selling stock.
Gotcha. So if someone's, let's say I'm an LLC and I'm like, hey, yeah, I think I'm going to exit in 5 years.
Yep.
I want to go and elect a C-Corp status. Does this essentially start from that day forward? Like the C-Corp's brand new, so it has to be over 5 years from that day?
Yeah, this is the point where you might want to loop in some counsel to help you with the structuring. And every business is going to be different. So I'm not going to give a ton of, I guess, guidance here because it just wouldn't fit your exact situation. But you do have to issue stock out of the new C-Corp. So in some cases, it could be as simple as converting to a C-Corp and drafting up some new documents. Mm-hmm. Or you could have to do sort of a whole restructuring process depending on the complexity of your business. And I think that, like I said, is going to be specific to the individual and is the point at which you would want to say, okay, I've identified this as a potential opportunity. Who do I need to talk to get the ball rolling and understand what the opportunity actually is here? At that point, it's not going to be a CPA or another type of financial planner. It's going to be an attorney of some kind, likely a tax or corporate attorney.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
We coach advisors a lot on like their ability to communicate well and using a whiteboard to coach people up on ideas. And so in my mind, things now, since I've been doing it for a while, kind of turn into whiteboard illustrations.
Sure.
As you say, QSBS, I write the abbreviation on the top of the board. And then, maybe an LLC circle, a C-Corp circle, and you start kind of working some high-level math out to coach somebody up on, hey, there is a structure that exists. If done appropriately, because I appreciate you not trying to give specific information, mm-hmm. It doesn't always apply. And then maybe hitting them with a couple of the highest level points where it's like, if it needs to be a C-Corp, needs to be around for at least 5 years or more, and then you could exclude up to $10 million of gain. And depending on your tax rate, that could save you anywhere from 28% or higher, depending on your state. I think that that's a pretty cool coachable moment in a first or second meeting with a prospect, especially a business owner. And in your experience, is it fair to say a lot of business owners aren't fully aware of this option?
Yes. Business owners in the venture ecosystem know about it. They've heard of it. They may not know how to take full advantage, but they've heard of it. And then outside of it, it really depends on who that business owner has been working with from the advisory perspective. Has their CPA ever mentioned it? Has maybe an investor that, wrote a check into the business early on, did that investor maybe mention it? But a lot of times there's a great deal of education. So some of the trigger words, if you want to add sort of to the whiteboard, you want to be saying, hey, does this prospect have a C Corp? If so, is it their company? Like, did they start the company or did they maybe buy the stock or the assets from someone else in the past? If it's their own thing, I can assume that what they have is C Corp stock that was issued directly from the company. And so you say, okay, we're on a good track here to this maybe being qualified small business stock. The next is you would say, hey, is this a law firm, a a doctor's office, a healthcare service based business, or is this, you know, manufacturing or home services or a tech, you know, a tech company? What is this? And if it is some of those latter types of business, it really is probably worth saying, hey, have you ever heard of qualified small business stock? Are you familiar with that? And the prospect very well may not. And you can say, that's something that we might want to dig a little bit more into here. And you've already now added value because you've said, hey, there could be this opportunity, which it sounds like you're not familiar with. And we're also willing to take on a little bit of the legwork here before we're actually engaged to see if, you know, the likelihood that you do have a chance to, you know, take a benefit in the future. And so a good way to start adding value before they're actually in your care.
Yeah, we coach up a lot of advisors on how to get paid for their time and ideas. I know that was a big shift in my business where I came from AUM all the time to, you know, I can build a plan for people and sell a plan which has these ideas.
Yeah.
I did get in trouble when there were times where I sold a financial planning engagement based on one idea, because what if that idea doesn't actually work? And so for everybody listening, if you were trying to get in the world of financial planning or you're already doing it, I think this is a great idea to have as a kind of a teaser and say, hey, if we get a chance to work together, we'll dive deeper into this. But this is one of the reasons why when I sell financial plan, I sell the process that we're putting them through as opposed to like selling individual ideas, because you can't ever guarantee for sure somebody pays you for this idea and you actually finish it or it actually works. And so that's just a little caution that I've been through.
Yeah, that's good. That's good clarity. I think that one way, and we haven't talked much about what our firm does and how we fit in here, we can do that more towards the end, but we're very neutral in this space in that we refer a lot of folks out to advisors, attorneys, CPAs, and other folks, and we get a lot of referrals from advisors in. And so having a Rolodex of people who, you know, aren't competing directly for the same type of business, but who can add value that doesn't maybe conflict with the process that you're trying to run with the client, the value that you're individually trying to add, can be really helpful to loop someone in and just say, hey, you know, take a look at this. Let's expedite the process of learning so that you really have all the tools to come back and say, hey, this is the value that we can add if you want to move forward.
I love that. Yeah, it was freeing for me. The term we use a lot in our business, centers of influence. Mm-hmm. And when I was trained in the business, it was like, find a bunch of centers of influence, which are people that know the people you want to work with, and just ask them for introduction.
Yeah.
And when I flipped that in my mind, I was like, instead of centers of influence, I'm going to have what I call idea partners, which these are people that I don't have to take anything from you. I'm like, man, but you're getting a bunch of referrals from advisors, like refer people to me. And then you'd say, well, I don't know where they're coming from. I can't really send them out right away. And all of a sudden there's this friction and like, why isn't this thing going both ways? Whereas if I approach our relationship as, you know, Brady is like my super weapon behind the curtain that nobody knows about. And when I run into a QSBS situation, I know who to call. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need referrals from you, because your knowledge, you know, is helping me prospect and close more business. And so for everybody listening, I reject centers of influence as a way to grow your business. It could work every once in a while, but for me, like most advisors I talk to, it's not great. But if you have a list of idea partners, of people that can kind of come in and make you look really good, to me, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. And I think that QSBS is a really strong example of that, because there are maybe, honestly, like 75 people in the US who have advanced knowledge of QSBS at all.
Yeah.
Very, very few advisors. I'm just going to say that flat out. Very few financial planners and advisors have what I would call advanced knowledge of QSBS. And so that means that you don't actually need to have advanced knowledge to be value additive. You just need to be in the top like 20%. You need to know the buzzwords, right? And then to go a step further than that, you need to at least have maybe someone like our firm or someone else who is in that top 75 in your corner, right? So now you're really adding value. And then if you take the time to learn it yourself, now you're in the top 1% on the specific niche, and you can prospect based on that. You can do all kinds of other you know, things. You can build networks that way. And so, I love the idea of having an expert, someone who's niched down behind the curtain.
Yeah, for me, I find there's advisors that prospect off relationship. Like, it's like, hey, I'm just going to meet you and hope you like me and then give me a shot.
Yeah.
I was never the master networker, you know, where I'm out there like having dinner with people and becoming your friend. Let's golf five times together and eventually going to roll over. And it works. I mean, I have buddies that are just naturally good at that. For me, I had to go more the route of like ideas. Like, you're going to work with me because I'm bringing you value. And if I do that enough, you will leave who you're with. Like, I think that if I bring enough value, you would probably fire your brother-in-law as your advisor, you know, mm-hmm. or at least pay me a fee to come in and level up what you're doing. The relationship thing just seems harder to me. It seems like a longer path as opposed to like, I'm going to go out there, build my idea partner list. I would say learn enough about this to educate and coach people that it's in existence, but I would never go as far as to try to like be the expert or you know, compete what your firm does. Cause to do that, the amount of time it would require, like I could just go help 10 more people and bring in the from there. So caution on that. If for any advisor listening, if you feel like you're trying to get a PhD in all these things, like you may end up knowing a lot, but you may not be helping a lot of people cause you didn't get clients at the end of the day.
Yeah. It makes me think of the boat thing. It's like, you know, it's better to know someone with the boat than to have a boat yourself. So it might work that way with some of these more niche ideas.
That's true with a beach house, a lake house, like pretty much all.
Yeah, a horse.
Yeah. So tell us a little about your firm as we wrap up.
Sure.
You said you guys aren't CPAs, aren't attorneys, but you have this niche. And then how do advisors interact with you guys? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I mentioned that in order to claim this really powerful tax exemption, you have to hold your stock for 5 years. A lot of people actually don't hold their stock for 5 years, especially in the types of, with the types of companies that we work with, maybe tech founders, tech businesses. A lot of times these shareholders are gaining liquidity through a secondary sale early, or they're just having a really quick exit. I mean, with these AI companies, data infrastructure, like these kinds of businesses out there, they're selling, a prospect recently with less than a year. They had been in their business less than a year and had a really sizable outcome. And so if you don't hold your stock for 5 years, you're kind of out of luck with QSBS, except they do have something in the tax code called a QSBS rollover, which some advisors may be familiar with 1031 exchanges. It's an extremely popular way to roll over and defer taxes in real estate investments, sort of a like-kind reinvestment. And you can do that with qualified small business stock as well. So if you can follow along here, and I sell stock in company A, and I make $5 million, but I sold that stock at like year three. So I didn't hit the 5 year holding requirement. So I have my $5 million and I'm facing $1 million plus tax bill. I can actually take that cash or a portion of it, however much I sort of want to protect from my federal gains tax. Let's just say I roll over all $5 million. I can take that $5 million and I can make a new investment into new QSBS. So that could mean either investing in someone else's business or starting my own new business and, you know, issuing new qualifying stock. Investing in someone else's company can be a great idea, but if this is your first $5 million, that might not be the most prudent solution because most early stage businesses fail. And if you're investing in something that high risk just for a tax benefit, maybe not the sharpest move, but it can be really good to, if you have an idea, to start your own new thing and to be able to control it and, you know, sort of hedge in different ways the risk that you're taking on. And so what we do is we help people, we facilitate these QSBS rollovers into their own new business. Nice. So this founder would come to us, they'd take their $5 million, we'd help them set up a new corporation that they wholly own and control. And then they would contract with our team to help them take a new business from zero to one, giving them enough time to explore a new market, explore a new product set, a new potential client base, explore what's out there in the realm of their idea while still qualifying for QSBS along the way, which will extend that holding period time clock, that 3 year clock that you sold at. You could extend it to 5 years, 6 years plus to a point where once you exit the new business, you now have your benefit in hand. So it's not just tax deferral. It allows for the future to actually take that money that didn't qualify initially as totally tax-free down the line. Really? So pretty much everyone we work with has sold stock before the 5 year mark, and they're working with us in order to position themselves for total tax free gain.
That's great. What's the name of your firm and how would folks look you guys up?
Yeah, we're super active on LinkedIn. We post a lot of kind of funny anecdotes and stuff about people claiming QSBS. But you can find us at QSBSRollover.com. And really easy to find information about QSBS there or get in touch with our team. I think we're really open to speaking with advisors and business owners, especially business owners where, it's just incredibly valuable to hop on the phone, 15 minutes, find out what situation someone's in, and be able to give them some of that like we were talking earlier, like start at the top and let's sort of vet out this opportunity and see, you know, what the potential is. We talk with hundreds and hundreds of founders a year, so we have a really good eye for, hey, are you in a position where you could claim this benefit or not? And so a lot of times if advisors reach out to us, they're using us as sort of that gut check, because it's all we do, to say, hey, this client, this prospect I'm talking to, do you think we might have something there, before, like you said, they rely on it as a selling point to work with that advisor. So always happy to consult, and we don't charge for that.
Perfect. That's really helpful. All right. So if I was everybody listening, I'd make sure Brady is on your idea partner list. And start diving into QSBS. Like, can you educate somebody on it in less than 90 seconds? You know, can you visually illustrate it? Not that it is the only value you have to add, but it's one of the things that you can bring to the table. So this was great. Brady, I appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Yep. All the best.